Welcome to the ISTE ASCD podcast, supporting you in your work to transform student learning. Here's your host for today's program.
Hi, everyone. I'm Anthony Rabora, the Chief Content Officer for ISTE ASCD. Classroom management is a huge topic in education today, with many schools reporting a rise in student behavioral issues. But should educators be focusing less on behavioral management and compliance per se, and more on cultivating belonging and building classroom culture? That is the view of my guest today. I'm joined by Dr. Sheldon Akins, an experienced educator and school leader who is the founder of the Purposeful Teaching Academy. He's the author of the forthcoming book, Meaningful Classroom Management, Adapting Your Teaching to Build Culture and Community. And he has a compelling article in the September 2025 issue of Educational Leadership titled Belonging Before Behavior. Welcome, Sheldon. It's great to get a chance to talk with you.
Pleasure's all mine. Thanks for having me.
So classroom management is a very popular, even urgent term in K-12 education these days. But in your article in Educational Leadership, you note that you're not a big fan of the actual term. Why not?
Well, so I grew up, I was one of those, I'm not going to lie to you, Anthony, I wasn't always the most behaved students in a teacher's classroom. So some of this might come from my own personal biases, if you will. But for me, when it comes to classroom management, I feel like that takes away from the student-centeredness. Now, you can argue it's all about semantics and things like that, but for me, I think words do matter. I feel like culture building would be more of an acceptable term, or collaboration type of communities. Those type of words, to me, make more sense than the traditional classroom management. I was one of those people, especially like in kindergarten, elementary, where, you know, my name gets put on the board. And then if I continue to misbehave, then there's a check. These kind of things, to me, were embarrassing, one. But on top of all that, you always see the same names all the time on the board, or those who have to go to the corner and all those kind of things. And I feel like it just kind of takes away from the belonging, the community building that we are all sharing. And it doesn't really give the students the buy-in, because it's more of authoritative type of structure.
Right. I like that culture building. Mm-hmm. So you also argue that creating environments that support students' individuality and their ability to self-regulate, you know, environments that really foster belonging, can reduce disruption in the classroom and conflict. What do you say to educators who may be skeptical of that, who may be struggling with some serious student behavioral issues and feel like they need to exert a certain amount of control and no-nonsense expectations for compliance?
I believe that there's a balance that needs to take place. And it starts with understanding a student's cultural background, their cultural norms. So, like, yeah, I know the child's name, I know what their favorite color is, but if I really have some more experience as far as how they prefer or what's more comfortable when it comes to how they learn. So for example, if I prefer to be in small groups versus if I prefer to work alone. So there's a lot of research that I come across, specifically Hofstede's work and his cultural learning dimensions, where it talks about the importance of understanding those cultural backgrounds, the individualistic versus collectivist backgrounds. Having that understanding can help you navigate those opportunities where you have missed, quote unquote, diagnosis of a student's behavior. Oh, this child is acting out, or this child is not performing on the tasks the way I wanted them to perform those tasks. But some of it might just stem from them wanting to or preferring to be in a group setting as opposed to working alone.
So you recommend a mindset that you call the teacher vibe, which stands for valuing, inclusion, belonging, and everyone. There's more detail in the article I would point readers to. But you emphasize this is not a checklist or a structured program.
Yeah.
So how can teachers adopt this approach and get good at shifting to it?
Yeah, it's a mindset that we're having. Like, do I value inclusion and belonging for everyone? And to me, the belonging, the everyone, those things really stand out when I was kind of putting my thoughts together on what does that look like. Again, if I'm thinking from a student-centered approach, so not necessarily Sage on stage or me up front, I'm the boss, and then y'all follow what I say, but how do I create a space, a community, in which students feel as if they have some buy-in, where they feel like they can be themselves, they can, not just in my classroom, but like how things are at home, how things are in their neighborhood, when they're around their friends, are they able to be comfortable who they are? Do they feel as if they have a say or have their voices are being heard because they have voice. And then also, is that included for every single student in the classroom? Not just our favorite ones, not just our quote unquote high performer, those kind of things, but those that are the quiet ones, those who are the ones that sometimes need a little bit more attention, those students as well. So if we have that mindset, then that can help mitigate a lot of misunderstandings when it comes to the behaviors that are in the classrooms. We might, again, like I said before, we might say, okay, folks, go sit down quietly at your table and work on this assignment. And then a student walks around and asks their classmates, okay, what did you get on number 5? Or they need to keep sharpening their pencil and all these different things that are quote unquote disruptive to the classroom. But if we create structures in which maybe that child, they needed to get up and they needed to get their pencil sharpened, but we create maybe a classroom job for them where it's like, okay, you're responsible for, I don't know, giving the kids a break, and you lead out in the break session. What does that look like? Maybe it's having them jog in place for a little bit, or maybe it's an opportunity for them to be in front and say a couple things. Maybe every day they're responsible for coming in to say a joke, but we're giving them some opportunities to help with that extra energy that might take away from the learning in our minds, but allowing students to, again, be themselves and still be able to have some understanding of, okay, this is my role in the classroom. This is what I'm bringing to the quote unquote table. And this is how I can still get my work done. I can still work with my friends. I can still be able to do these things in a collaborative space.
Yeah, so it's really about getting to know students really well and accommodating their differences.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So you also talk about, you actually referred to this earlier, you talk about the differences between individualist and collectivist cultures and the tendency of U.S. classrooms to be more oriented around individualism.
Yes.
Why is it important to have more of a balance between those two?
Okay, here's the thing. Traditional classroom, it's not uncommon to see students when you walk in a classroom and they're aligned in rows. Like, you know, this is how I grew up, I know. And we still see a lot of classrooms like that where there aren't necessarily group clusters or seating in that way, but it's just more of, you know, here's 5 desks to a row. And then again, the idea of working alone or working to yourself, working quietly, those things are still perpetuated. And it tends to lean heavily in that direction. We talk about GPAs. That's an individual thing. We talk about assessments, standardized testing. Those are all individually based. And there's not a lot of emphasis on those projects. There's not a lot of emphasis on group harmony. There's not a lot of emphasis on opportunities for us to share thoughts. So when we think about how our systems are set up in that way, where we lean heavily, especially in the United States, towards individualistic type of traits, that leaves out a group of students, students that are raised in a space that is more on the collective side. So that's why you need to have a bit of a balance, because you're not going to have a classroom of 30 kids and all of them favor the individualistic style approach to education. You're going to have some mixtures. Again, that's why it's important to learn about the characteristics of your students, how things are at home. The example that I use in the article is about the refrigerator. When I was growing up, everything in the refrigerator was allocated to something or somebody. When I started my own household, it's like, okay, if you're hungry, go ahead and find what you want to find. There's not labels or there's not names. Oh, this is allocated to such and such person. This is for whoever. If you want something, you want a bag of chips, it's not for dad or brother. It's for anybody who wants these food. Please be mindful of others, but at the same time, it's more of an open style. So the first example that I gave you, where it's like everything's allocated, doesn't necessarily mean that it's a wrong thing, but it's more of a preference for some folks of people or some cultural norms versus a collective group where it's like you get what you want to get and it's okay. So that's kind of the way I kind of frame it to try to give a little bit more understanding or more background when it comes to the individualism versus the collectivism.
What are some classroom management or student support strategies that you wish more teachers had learned in their teacher prep programs? I guess I'm wondering, like, what do you look for when you observe a classroom?
Well, the first thing I look at is the seating.
Okay.
It starts there, right? So are students in rows or are they in groups and clusters? And is there a variety? So sometimes what we do is, okay, we'll just put all the desks in fours. But sometimes you might need situations where students might just need pairs or it might be a group of threes. So if you have a mixture of maybe some set of fours here, maybe a set of threes here, maybe a set of two, and then if you need, a set of one. But there is a variety of seating. That's the first thing I'm going to look at. Then I'm going to look at, again, is there a mixture? I'm not saying just everything needs to be group only, because then we're going to be leaning further on one end than the other. But is there a balance with the type of assessments that you're providing? So are they getting opportunities to do group work, but then maybe they have some individual assignments built in? Are there opportunities that you can celebrate students that, okay, maybe this individual, for we're doing a group assignment. And so when I do project-based learning, I give roles. Okay, so you're a team, you're working in a group, but maybe you're a note taker, this person here, you're in charge of being a spokesperson, and this person here, you're the researcher. So maybe I can give grades based off of how they perform those tasks, but then they also get a collective grade for that project as well. So again, there is a balance between the different cultural backgrounds.
So we're talking right now, it's the middle of August, back to school time. What's the number one thing you want educators to know about creating thriving classrooms this school year?
Creating a sense of belonging to me has always been at the forefront, where students feel valued, where students feel that their voices are being heard. You're not creating a space where they have to throw those things away and assimilate to what is deemed acceptable, what a student is supposed to be in our minds, but allowing space for autonomy for our kids would be the first thing that I would say. But again, early on in the school year, this is a great opportunity for us to get to know them, not just their favorite color and birthdays, but to get them to know them more on a personal level as well.
That seems like a great message. One last question. What can school leaders do to better support teachers in this work of cultivating belonging like you're talking about?
Any sort of professional development that leans towards project-based learning, any sort of professional development that leans that way. Because again, I feel like most teachers, I would just argue that most teachers have the individualism side down. And maybe they might need some reinforcement when it comes to the project-based or the group, collective, pairs, those kind of things, where students are working in with more than one person. So just being able to support educators in that sense. And then again, advocating for sense of belonging for our students as well. So those are some leadership strategies that I would recommend.
That sounds like excellent advice. Dr. Sheldon Akins, thanks so much for joining us and sharing your ideas and expertise. And thanks to all our listeners for tuning in. To read Sheldon Akins' article in the September issue of Educational Leadership, visit www.ascd.org/EL. See you next time.